get started on our Bible class. Glad everybody is here and hope you're feeling well and doing well. And have had a good week. What announcements do we have? Do we have any from this group? Nothing? Nothing? It's hot in here, isn't it, Sherry? It is hot. It may not be too bad out there, but it's warm in here. I kind of was afraid of this. Well, I may have to do that here in a second. May have no announcements. Okay. I was going to mention that in the 10 o'clock service, but go ahead and mention it both. If you didn't get the email with the e-blast last night, the elders have sent out with the strong help of the committee or the group of men, the task force is working on this land purchase. There's an update. And they sent one out by e-blast yesterday afternoon, and there are copies on the table in the back if you didn't get one or haven't checked your email yet. So we're excited about that. Things almost looks like and feels like at times progress is not being made, but that's not true. Progress is being made, and a lot of work and a lot of effort is being exerted. Okay. Also, they had an e-blast about recipes. Are the recipes coming in? They are? They're rolling in. Okay. So, ladies, and I guess gentlemen also, if you've got a good recipe you want to submit, I don't think it would be limited just to ladies, is it? And men may have some good recipes. I make a mean milkshake. I don't know if anybody needs to know how to make a milkshake or not. Okay. Well, do we have a volunteer for prayer this morning? Then we're going to jump right to our list. We got a lot of verses this morning. Need a prayer. Andrew, you look like a man that could pray, can you? All right, thank you. Amen. We're going to jump right in here because, as I said, we do have a couple of big stories out of the life of Jesus, as Mark, inspiration of the Holy Spirit, gives to us this morning. We're going to jump into verse 30, chapter 6. Last week, by Mark's account of what he gives us of Jesus' life, we had a little bit of a break from activity with Jesus to where he talked about John the Baptist and how John the Baptist, was killed and why he was killed. And the reason being that Herod, he explained how Herod was getting extremely nervous because he's hearing all the miraculous events that are taking place by Jesus, the healings and some of the things we're going to see today. And somebody has said, he's heard the street talk, that some have said Jesus is John the Baptist come back from the dead. Well, since he's the man who killed John the Baptist or ordered it to be done, that obviously got his attention, made him nervous. And so Mark took this opportunity to explain to us the story that we get from the other Gospels also about John the Baptist and the beheading of John the Baptist. Now we come back to verse 30 this morning. And he says the apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. All they had done and taught. Now, if we'll jump back just prior to the account of John the Baptist being beheaded, and Herodias and Salome and Herod. If we jump back just before that, that's where Jesus sent the apostles out two by two. He said, I'm going to give you the authority to be able to drive out the demons, give you the ability to perform miraculous acts, and I'm going to send you out to teach. And he gave them specific instructions. This is where they're not taking extra clothes. They don't take any food. They don't take any money. They go out and they stay in the same house as long as they're in a city. And they preach. And if folks don't listen to them and don't receive them well, they shake the dust off their feet and they leave town. Well, he sends them out two by two. He says here, they're back now. The apostles gather around Jesus, and they reported what they had done, what they had taught. So this is their information, their stories, their account, their reports to Jesus about their trips and that they had been out, I guess, on six different trips because they went two by two. It's interesting, none of the four Gospels give us any idea of what Jesus' reaction was, what he may have said or didn't say. We just don't know. That's just not recorded anywhere. It's just left up to us to wonder about, I guess. But, you know, did Jesus say, job well done? Did he say, that's very interesting? Did he say, you could have improved in this way? Why didn't you go further? Why didn't you do this? You should have done that. Next time, do that. We just don't have it. Mark says they reported to Jesus, and then we go on to the next verse. It says, then, because so many people were coming and going that they didn't even have a chance to eat. You ever get that way? You've been so busy that day, and if you work for the public, if you're in an area where people are coming all the time, sometimes it's because there's been so many folks coming, calling, interrupting, and you realize, man, I haven't even eaten. No wonder I feel tired and weak right now. You're on your way home and say, I never did it. I didn't have time to eat today. Just so much was going on. It's what Mark says was happening. So many people coming, they hadn't even had time to take a break or to eat. And so Jesus said to them, he said, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and let's get some rest. Come with me. Anybody have the King James with you this morning? What does he say here in the King James? Come ye apart. Come ye yourselves apart. I heard a sermon one time, which was a good sermon. The preacher took that verse, and he talked about the need for personal refreshment and personal engagement with God and personal time in prayer. And he used this, and he quoted the old King James, and he said, Jesus told them, come ye apart. And he said, there are times in his sermon, he said, there are times you have to come apart or you will come apart. You physically will wind up in the hospital. You physically will be in the bed. You physically may fall over of a heart attack. You emotionally, your mind will get so full it just explodes. And so that was his whole thesis, was come ye apart before ye come ye apart. And there's something to that. There really is. That's why in the Old Testament, I truly believe, that's why they honored the Sabbath and remembered the Sabbath and kept it holy. It was for God, but it was for them also. It was for them too. And Sabbath, and we talked about this when we went through the book of Hebrews, Sabbath, we associate it with Saturday, or we associate it with seventh. because it was on the seventh day, but the Hebrew word for Sabbath hadn't got a thing to do with seven. It means rest. Rest. Now, it was on the seventh day, but it was a day of rest. That's why the writer of Hebrews describes our New Testament or our Christian Sabbath is going to be what? Well, it's the first day of the week. It's the worship. But what is the Sabbath that's promised to us? The rest. The Sabbath rest is heaven. It's heaven. We will enjoy our Sabbath rest when we get to heaven. So anyway, we can see in this, Jesus recognized their need because we're going to see that he recognizes his need also here, and just real quickly in this passage. He recognized their need to get away as a group, just he and his inner circle. And he said, let's go to a quiet place. Let's get some rest. Let's be refreshed. So they went away by themselves in a boat, verse 32. To a solitary place, but many who saw them leaving recognized them, ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. I don't know where the solitary place was, but it had to have been one that was known by folks to be a place of retreat, a place that you would go to rest. Around here, if you were thinking about a place, a solitary place to rest, where would it be? I'm not as familiar with the area a whole lot more than I used to be, but what would be the spots you'd run to? Home, okay, well, where else? What park? One of the parks, okay. Well, whatever it was for them, people figured it out. By the direction they headed, and by what somebody may have heard him say to them, they figured out where they were going, and it says they ran. It's interesting that Jesus and the disciples went in a boat, but they figured out how to get there by land, and so they ran to get there and got there before they did. Beat them there. Got there ahead of them. So they've gone to get away from the crowds. They've gone to get some rest. They've gone for some quiet time. And when Jesus landed there in the boat, he saw a large crowd. I'm sure he had mixed emotions. If the purpose was to get away from the people, if you go back and look at the reason they're leaving, that's verse 31. Come with me, by yourselves, quiet place, rest. That's why they've gone. There's got to be a little bit of frustration when you get there and they can't even get a campsite. The campground's so full, there's not any place even to put up a tent and to get their corner of it. That's got to be frustrating, but that's not the emotion that Mark records. He says Jesus saw them and he had compassion on them. He's tired. His apostles are tired. They went for a retreat. But he cannot help but feel compassion for the people. Why? Because they were like sheep without a shepherd. Y'all tell me about sheep without a shepherd. Sir? They could wander off anywhere. They could walk, they could fall off of the cliffs, they could get in the running water and drown. It's what Psalm 23, just go read it, what the shepherd does for the sheep to protect them, to refresh them, take care of them, to lead them. Without a shepherd, they are in bad, bad way. Jesus said, that's where these people are. They don't have a clue. They don't have any idea what they're supposed to do. And the only thing they knew to do when they saw me leave them back wherever it was I left them from, and we got in the boat and we sailed around, The only thing they needed to do was to come find me, their sheep, without a shepherd. And he said, Mark says, he had compassion on them. That got him. Jesus shows us this. We see this in him several times in his ministry. You remember one time when he's looking over Jerusalem? Toward the end of his ministry, what did he say? Jerusalem, Jerusalem. What did he say about them? Would that I could gather you up and put you under my wings, under my nest. I would like to gather you up as a hen would gather up her chicks. But you won't listen. You will not listen. But he had compassion. It affected him. It touched him. There was a real, real affinity for helping people, leading people. So he said, I'm going to change my plans. We came up here for a little vacation, for a little getaway. But there's all these folks here. They need teaching. They need helping. So verse 35, Mark says, by this time it was late in the day. His disciples said to him, this is a remote place. Well, I guess so. It took them a while to get there by boat, and these other people ran hard to get there. It's a remote place. That's where they were going. It's a place of solitude. And it's already very late. Send the people away. John says, by the way, this feeding of this large group is in all four of the Gospels, including John. A lot of times we'll find something in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, not in John. This is in all four Gospels. John, over in John 6, he will indicate to us that the first suggestion for going and getting the food comes from Jesus, not from the disciples. Mark indicates that the disciples say, it's very late, send them away so they can go get something to eat. Go to the surrounding countryside, villages, they can buy themselves something to eat. No restaurants out here. No grocery stores out here at the retreat center. But Jesus answered, you give them something to eat. You give them something. They said to him, that'd take 8 months of man's wages. Now, how they computed that quickly, I don't know. But one of them's got a couple of them were accountants, tax collectors, and men who dealt with money. I don't know. But they said, that's going to take 8 months worth of wages to pay for that food. You mean that we just came out here for a getaway. Remember, Jesus? You remember what you told us before we got in the boat? Let's go before we come apart. Let's go ye apart and let's go get us some rest. Do you remember that conversation? And now it's our responsibility to feed this crowd. It'd take 8 months worth of a salary to do it. Now again, I like to try to put myself in their shoes at that time. What had they just come back from? Verse 30 we started. Where had they just been? He had sent them out to teach. And what was one of the things he told them? Don't take any money and don't take any food. And now I'm responsible for feeding everybody. Why does that apply to me? I guess they didn't bring food, but why is it up to me? Why is it up to us to feed this mean people? Besides that, we can't do it. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat? And my guess would be, though it's not recorded here, if they're out in a remote place, and you go back to verse 36, the surrounding countryside and villages to buy something to eat. If you've ever been to remote places, you go out to the lakes or the campsites or somewhere, how many big stores are there around there if you went into the little village? Certainly nothing. Certainly not the new Kroger that Jonathan works there. Have y'all been seeing his store up there? Karen and I stopped there coming in Christmas. She was going to make us Christmas. We stopped there as we were coming in on 99. Now that's something to see up there. You can buy clothes up there. Can you imagine? So that's a boy. That's nice. Where do you get that Kroger? You like my Kroger? See, I shop at Kroger. They can buy clothes up there. That store's got everything. Now you don't have that out in the countryside. Best they could have hoped for would be a little general store, a little convenience store somewhere. Where, if we had the 8 months' wages, where are we going to buy this kind of food? Now, that's not all recorded there, but they've got to be thinking about it. They've got to be considering it. Well, I've just hit this button so many times, I don't know where I'm at. He says, how much food do we have? If we don't go spend 8 months' worth of wages, if we don't go to town, we don't go to the store, what do we have? Go see, he said. Go out there and find out what we've got. Well, he came back and said, we got 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. Now, there again, Mark doesn't give us the details of this. We find in the other Gospels, I believe, probably, I'm trying to remember, they may have all three done it, but I think it's John that tells us the little boy. There's a little boy there that has it. One of them certainly does, maybe multiple ones. But if you go over to John 6, I think you'll find what it says, that there's a young man, there's a little boy here. He's got 5 fish. I'm sorry, 5. Got 2 fish and 5 loaves of bread. By the way, these loaves of bread, John says, are barley loaves. Barley loaves, that was the blue-collar workers' bread. That wasn't the top-end best bread. Too small fish. But the barley loaves were small also. They weren't a tall loaf of bread like you're thinking about right now. It was just a little bit more than unleavened bread. It was very thin. It was so small you didn't cut it, you'd break it. That's why they broke the bread and gave it to them. They just pull it apart. So 5 little substandard grade barley loaves and 2 small fish. That's what we've got. Jesus said, well, we'll work with that. That'll work. He said, have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So it says here in one of the other accounts says the same thing. He put them in groups of 50s. And this in Mark says, and hundreds. Why would you put them in groups of 50s and hundreds? If this is a group of 50, a group of 50 and 100, see what I can do here? I can walk down between you and serve you. It's pretty hard to serve 5,000. How are you going to pass out 5,000? That'd be a long row, and they weren't in rows. So it made it easier for the distribution. Also made it easier to count. That's how they know how many that there were, I'm guessing. Also, and it's not today's lesson, but also, what time is it? Oh, 9. Looks like a 3 all of a sudden. 9:27. Also, we serve a God of order. God's always been orderly the way he does things. And even Paul, when he talks to the Corinthian brethren over there about their worship, he said, let's let things be done decently and in order. We serve a God of order. But in any event, they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. Taking the 5 loaves, the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven. He gave thanks. We don't know what he said in the prayer. We're not hearing that prayer. But then he broke the loaves. And he gave them to his disciples, said, set it before the people. Then he did the same thing with the two fish and said they all ate and were satisfied. 5,000 men. We're going to get to that in a minute. Verse 44, number of men. Matthew says 5,000 men plus women and children. Now, how many women were there? Was everybody there with a wife or a date? I don't know. If they were, it goes to 10,000 immediately. Did everybody have a kid? I don't know. If they did, it goes to 15,000 immediately. If they had two kids, it goes to 20,000. This big group. It's bigger than any 5,000 because Mark says men only. Matthew says 5,000 men plus women and children. So all of these people ate. In verse 43, they picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish, which shows stewardship. John's account, Jesus said, pick it up so that none goes to waste. Be frugal with what you have. Take care of what you've got. 12 basketfuls. Started out with 5 little barley loaves and 2 little fish. Feed 5, 10, 15, 20, 25,000 people. And we got 12 baskets left now. Now that's pretty big stuff, pretty big deal. Many years ago, first year we were married, back in those days, the diet that they always put you on was the Scarsdale diet. Y'all remember the Scarsdale diet? Somebody finally shot that doctor. Seriously. I think it was a jealous wife or somebody, but I think it was somebody over the diet. He got shot, Dr. Scarsdale did. But about every other day, you'd have to eat this fish. And I've never been a big fish eater unless it was fried catfish or crappie. But this was broiled fish. It would stink so bad. After we got off the diet, Karen finally had to throw the pan away. You couldn't cook anything else in it. Every time you put it in the oven and heat it up, it just filled the house again with that smell. And you couldn't eat the stuff. And I told her one day, I said, this passage has got a lot more clarity to me. Now, I used to think this was really a miraculous thing, but I can understand where you could serve this and you'd have 12 basketfuls left because you can't eat the stuff. But then I read the passage again and it says they were all satisfied. This was good food. This was good fish. And they're happy. Pretty big miracle. Well, as soon as that's over, Mark says immediately, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat again. Said, man, we tried this once. It's time for us to leave again. This time we're not going to just go up the coast a little bit to where they can run along the shoreline with us and beat us there. We're going across the lake. We're going across the Sea of Galilee again. At the spot that they're going to go across, they're going to wind up over at Gennesaret. We're going to see here in a minute. The crossing there is about 6 to 6.5 miles wide. That's how wide the lake would be. So just keep that in mind as we go through. Because they're going to get out in the middle and you know Jesus is going to meet them. John will tell you they have traveled about 3 to 3.5 miles. When Jesus shows up, and that lets us know again, that's the area where it is. It's that 6 mile, 6.5 mile stretch there, and they get about halfway. But he puts them in the boat, and he says, go on. I'm not going with you. I'll join you. They didn't seem to be concerned about how he was going to get there, but they leave. Verse 40, after leaving them, he went up on a mountainside to pray. There are numerous times. In fact, I shouldn't say this because I don't remember exactly. I think it's like 25 times in the Gospels we see Jesus praying by himself. That may not be the proper amount of times if we were to count them. There's a sufficient number, a lot of times, that he goes and he spends time just him and the Father. He understands the need for that. This is one of them. And he prays. But when evening came, the boat's in the middle of the lake. John says three and a half miles. And he's alone on the land. The crowds, I guess, got enough to eat and they went home. We don't know what happened to the crowds. But he sees the disciples out in the middle of the lake and they are straining at the oars. Remember, they don't have motors. They're not inboard, outboard, or either board. It's the boards are the oars that they're rowing with. And they're having a lot of trouble because the wind is against them. They're going against the wind. It says it's the fourth watch of the night. The Jewish watch started at 6 p.m. And they had three-hour watches. If you were a guard or you were a sentry, you had a three-hour shift. So your first watch would have been from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. And you'd had second watch would be 9 p.m. to midnight. Third watch would be midnight to 3 a.m. Fourth watch is going to be 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. It's in that period of time now. So Jesus more than likely been praying for a while. And they've been out there rowing for a while. And they're three and a half miles into a 6-mile journey across that lake, going into the wind. And it's the fourth watch. So that lets us know it's after 3 a.m. in the morning. And Jesus says, I'm going to go out to him. And he starts walking on the water. Doesn't take him long. He's about to pass the boat. I don't know if he intended just to go ahead and walk all the way to the other side and get over there ahead of him and rest or what. But he's about to pass the boat. But verse 49 says, when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost. Now, I think that's why we're told it's the fourth watch. It's dark. They're tired. Wee hours of the morning. Wind is blowing. May have been foggy. May have been misty. Don't know that. But they see something and they just cannot recognize who it is. And they assume it's a ghost. Why would they assume it was a ghost? People don't walk on water. They never walked on water or seen anybody that had. So they assume it's a ghost. And so they are afraid. They are terrified. Well, they cried out. Immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid. Now, yes, sir. Yeah. He's about to go by them. He's just sliding on that water, isn't he? Gliding on that water. He's making good time. He could see from before he started, he saw them. He wanted them to be frightened, I guess. And he maybe had intended just to go on the cross. But because they're terrified, my guess is, strictly a guess, my guess is it's like seeing the crowd and had compassion on them. He may have been just going to go on the other side and wait on them. That's what he told them he'd do. He'd meet them on the other side. But when he heard their fear, that they were terrified, my guess, and I underscore guess, is that once again his compassionate heart had compassion on them. Now, Mark does not include this part about Peter here, which is kind of interesting to me. Matthew does. Mark doesn't. And you may say, well, that's because the big part was Jesus was walking on the water. Well, yeah, but that to me, that's not quite as big as Peter walking on the water. Jesus could do whatever he wanted to do. But there is this part about Peter did it. So I don't know why that's not included here, why Mark chooses through inspiration not to tell us about Peter, but we know from Matthew's account this would be the point. When they looked and saw, and Jesus said, "It's I." What did Peter say according to Matthew? "Lord, if that be you, bid me to come to you on the water. Let me come to you on the water." And he said, "Come on." And that's when Peter gets out of the boat and walks to him on the water until he looks around and realizes what he's doing. And, you know, if you put yourself in Peter's position there, he probably looked and said, "What? I can't do this. How am I doing this? This is not, I've never walked on water before." And as soon as the doubt came into his heart, he started to sink. And then he said, "Lord, save me." Jesus, Scripture, Matthew says, just reached down, pulled him up, set him in the boat. And we've been critical through the years of poor old Peter. We're critical of Peter a lot because he's always so impetuous and jumps right into things. Until you realize, out of 12 people, he's the only one who got out of the boat. We can talk about his faith that wavered, but at least he had enough faith to get out of the boat to start with. The other 11 didn't. Anyway, Mark didn't spend any time on that, so that's all the time I'm going to spend on it. But Jesus just gets in the boat. When they said, "We're terrified," he says, "It's me, it's I, don't be afraid." Mark says he climbed into the boat with them. The wind died down. Second time we've seen Jesus calm the winds on that same lake. Second time. And it happened again. They were completely amazed, for they had not understood about the loaves. That's been their conversation. How in the world did he do that? Well, I go. Does anybody, were those 5 barley loaves and those 2 little, is that really all we had? Yeah, it was. How in the world, did you see how much we had left over? How did that happen? Were you helping pass it out? Yeah, I was. I was over that, over there on the east side with those groups over there. Were you breaking it? Yeah. Did it ever get any smaller? No. How did that happen? That's what Mark says the conversation had been about. Yes, sir. Yeah, that's right. That's John's account, right? John says when Jesus got in the boat, that's a very interesting verse. He gets in the boat and they are immediately where they were going. Now, John already says that they were 3.5 miles into it. Mark says it's halfway. We know geographically it's 6 miles or so. But he gets in the boat. Now, you talk about a speedboat. Immediately, they're to the other side. I got to move. We're going to run out of time. We're nearly there now. They crossed over. They landed at Gennesaret and anchored there. Gennesaret's just an area along the Sea of Galilee. In fact, I think it's in Luke. Luke refers to the Sea of Galilee on one occasion as the Sea of Gennesaret. This is one of the names for it. Anyway, that's where they land. Anchored. Soon as they got out of the boat, people recognized Jesus. Jesus got a reputation that far exceeds him, gets there quicker. They ran through the whole region. brought all the sick people out, wanted to hear what he was doing. Wherever he went, into the villages, the towns, the countryside, they brought the sick in the marketplaces. They begged him to let them touch even the edge of his cloak. And all who touched him were healed. So when he gets over there, people continue to come to him for healing and for strength. Now, can you believe how I can get through four verses in 45 seconds? But we can when we have to. And there are things in there we could talk about, but the main thrust is Jesus took the apostles, the disciples, on a little side trip vacation, but he had compassion on the crowds and he couldn't help but help them. He sends them on across the lake. Looked like he's going to pass them by. I'm guessing he had compassion on them, got in a boat with them. And now they finally get to the other side, still tired. People come from everywhere with needs, with illnesses. Jesus has compassion, and he allows them to be healed. These people have enough faith, and it could be Jesus looks tired enough that they say, look, we don't want to bother you. Could we just touch the hem of your garment? We believe we can just touch the tassels, the frill on the Jewish garment, that we could be saved. We could be healed. We could be cured. He said, fine. They touched, and they were cured. And therein is today's passage. Any questions or any comments? Jim. Yeah, that is important. And the reason I jumped that is I can't handle that in 45 seconds. But I appreciate you bringing that. What does it mean that their hearts were hardened? What does it mean when Pharaoh's heart was hardened? What does that mean for the hardening of the heart? Bill says they took it for granted. Jim, you brought it up. You got an idea what that means? That's generally what we see when it comes to heart. And they're still talking about it and probably saying it just can't be. Well, I was there. Well, you had, yeah, but this just does not add up. And evidently they've been doing that for 3 hours. So they're struggling with that, Brett. Okay. There is that possibility. Let me put words in your mouth, but I think what you're saying is it's not necessarily this event that hardened their hearts. But with everything they've been seeing, they're to the point to where they just don't know what's happening anymore. Right. Okay. Okay. It's bigger, and it's, yeah. Right. Okay. Good points. And I learned something else. You can't slip nothing by this group in here, because I thought I was going to just slip that by since I was out of time. But it's good we came back. I'm glad you brought us back. Okay, we'll be back at 10 o'clock.